Hi, Monk Podcast listeners. The following is a sample of the Monk Members Only Podcast. To access the full-length edition of this episode and all of our regular Monk Members Only Podcasts, go to our website, www.monkdebates.com, and register for membership. Membership is free, and it's available for you right now at www.monkdebates.com. Hope you enjoy the program. Hello, Monk members. Roger Griffiths here, your host and moderator. Welcome to this, our regular Monk Members Only Podcast, a weekly program digging into the big issues and ideas in the news with Janice Grossstein, the founding director of the Monk School of Global Affairs, an internationally acclaimed scholar and author. Janice, great to be in dialogue with you. I hate to say it. It's September, Janice, the second Labor Day weekend.
I don't think there's a Canadian alive who doesn't greet Labor Day with mixed feelings, Roger.
The winter is closer.
Yes.
I'm here having my Labor Day weekend in the Eastern Townships in Quebec. And, you know, it was the first evening last night where I put a sweater on. And I always, each year, that's kind of like a semi-traumatic event. The putting on of the first sweater, because you know it's basically the next 9 months.
It's not a good sign.
Well, look, on better news, we have had a winner for the very, very helpful kind of informal contest that we created the last few weeks to create a better name for this podcast, something punchier that captures the essence of what we try to do each week. So thank you for all your suggestions. We're going to debut that name next week on the show with some new graphics and just basically a new plan for the show coming up into the fall. So thank you, everybody, for the suggestions. We crowdsourced it, Janice. The wisdom of crowds comes through once again.
And it really worked. And there were really hundreds of entries into this. So really grateful for all the engagement.
Absolutely. Well, two topics every show. Let's kick off with number one, which has to be, Janice, this partly driven by the calendar. It is the return to school next week. But more importantly, for many people, especially white collar professionals, a drive to return to the office. This is understandably a little bit more advanced in the United States. Just maybe a different ethic there around work in person. Here in Canada, Janice, you have to have a sense here of real resistance on the part of white-collar professionals to get back into the office. Reports that most are functioning at under 30% and that there is kind of large-scale resistance. I want your thoughts on this. I've got some views, some strong ones, actually, on this. I find this topic elicits maybe some concerns I have about a broader sense of where our society is at and where people's values are at in terms of what they owe their employers and their coworkers. But what's your take on the so-called return to work?
So, Monk listeners, I'm guessing what Roger's views are, and I'm preemptive here. So I'm going to say, look, we need to be able to innovate in the way we work. So models that we developed in the 19th century, where everybody showed up on the factory floor, is not necessarily the best model for a 21st century economy. And so I really do think we have to be open to a whole series of hybrid models. And we learned a lot over the last 2 years, both on what technology works and what work patterns we can innovate around. And I get the resistance, Rudyard. People were spending in our big cities and even in our smaller cities like Ottawa, 40 minutes of traffic each way, all kinds of childcare problems and drop-off problems, and working from home is just so much easier. But that misses a big part of the story, which is the value of coworkers. What you learn from being in the office every day with people that you bump into, the opportunity to talk about new ideas and either to diss them right away or say, hey, that's interesting. Let's explore this further. And look, we have so much evidence now, Roger. We're actually getting hard data that online Zoom experience is not the equivalent of interacting personally in a given, you know, back and forth way. So there are, and let me give us, let's talk about two examples. The banking sector in downtown Toronto, which is a well-paid sector, is having huge trouble getting their staff back to work. And what's the ask, by the way? Not 5 days a week in the office, two days a week. They're still getting pushback. The federal public service is getting huge pushback. And the clerk has not yet formalized the request. She wants everybody back in the office 2 days a week. Now, if we're talking about innovating, creating new hybrid patterns, that seems a reasonable request. At the university, we're all back 5 days a week, frankly. And we're back last year. So I think a resistance to coming back at all for most people, we will be a big loss.
Yeah, I have two kind of kicks of this can. The first has to do with, you know, equity. And I think a new type of divide that worries me. You know, we're all concerned about equity. We're all concerned about inequality, rightly so. Let's acknowledge the growing inequality of work, that there are people, primarily blue-collar workers, who throughout this pandemic, including during surges of the virus, worked 9 to 5, Monday to Friday, every day. They drove to a place of work, a Tim Hortons, a food processing factory.
Supermarket.
A supermarket, a warehouse. And they worked, and they worked hard, often in circumstances where, you know, again, there was increased virus circulating. They dealt with that anxiety. And what we've had, thanks to technology, is a white-collar professional class, often the very first people to put their hands up in favor of, you know, pulling kids out of school or having much more restrictive COVID measures than other segments of society. Those people stayed at home on their Mac Air books, often at their cottage, often taking nice long breaks, as you could, as you should, to walk your dog or see your kids off to school in the morning. And in short, they enjoyed a very different lifestyle. At the same time, very little, Janice, in the way of loss of income or opportunity. In fact, often their net household worth went up because they were spending less. And so I'm concerned here, Janice, about an equity issue where can we really say to blue-collar workers, hey, you're the Morlocks and we're the Eloy, and you have to do 9 to 5 or longer at a physical place of work and work hard and work with other people and maybe get exposed to new waves and new variants in the future. And hey, we white-collar professionals, this doesn't apply to us. We're staying at home. We're maybe coming, you know, you were kind about the federal civil service. They're potentially arguing over 1 day a week, Janice.
That's astonishing.
The hundreds of thousands of square feet of office space and infrastructure that we Canadians are paying for to allow these bureaucracies to happen, to deliver public services to us. Come on, Janice, this is, where are our values? Where is our sense of solidarity, of commonality to other people? This to me is, again, this is my final part of this rant. There's just I worry about a kind of creeping narcissism in our society. We're narcissistic often about what we eat, or narcissistic, understandably, sometimes about the friends we keep or not, or the places we choose to go or not. And now work has fallen into the black hole of our collective narcissism. It's become something we think we have a choice about, as opposed to maybe a mentality towards work as work is work. It's not always enjoyable. Sometimes it's inconvenient, but you're doing it for yourself to earn an income, to provide for you, your family, etc. But you're also doing it for your other coworkers, to be part of a team, to be part of a culture, to advance a project together, to get outside of yourself, to get your bloody pajamas off and get into the world to define who you are and to help other people define who they are, and together, ideally, to make a more productive, dynamic economy that's going to pay for all the lovely social programs that we all like and support. Okay, I'm ranting way too much. Back to you.
You know, I'm not surprised that you feel strongly about this one. This was predictable. And here's where I agree with you entirely. To refuse to go back even one day a week, that I just cannot comprehend it at all. Let's talk about young people who have been hired during the pandemic. They have never met in person the person they're reporting to. They've had online mentorship at the best, which is not the same as in-person mentoring. And that at the very least 2 days a week in which you commit to meet with the younger people who are coming into the work stream, who will benefit so much from the mentoring, I really find that astonishing. So I agree with you entirely. But let's talk about the bigger issue that you put on the table, Roger. It's about community. That's really what you're saying. It's not only about the individual, it's what works for the community. So if we look at our downtowns, we're going to haul them out. Now, is that a good thing or a bad thing? Can you think of repurposing some of those big, you know, tall, closed window towers and using them for additional housing, for other purposes? It would clearly cut traffic if people were in 2 days a week instead of five and you can alternate. There might be efficiencies. You just talked about the cost of the capital infrastructure. The University of Toronto, which is a 100,000 person community, just said this summer for the first time, they are looking to exist within their current footprint. They're not going to grow their footprint because there's some flexibility now in the way we can do things. So what I don't want to see is throw out everything that we tried over the last 2 years and say everybody back in the office 5 days a week. But for public servants who, by the way, the public sector has grown faster over the last 2 years than the private sector, it's hired more young people. For them to say 1 day a week is too hard, well, there's nobody that I think that's really not a defensible position.
Yeah, 85% of all the new job creation in Canada between COVID and now has been inside government directly, yeah, or what you call the near state, you know, yeah, the hospital education sector. So that's how we've ginnied up the employment numbers. Only 60,000 jobs since COVID have been created in the private sector.
That's worrying alone, Richard.
I would say, look, I'm not an economist, but I would say, you know, if we continue this experiment on people not returning to work, you are going to see less job creation, arguably lower productivity. I don't know if you have that sense, Janice, but I often feel like now when I'm dealing with larger corporations and people who are not in an office, there's a free agency that understandably creeps into everyone. You're kind of an assassin out there on your own. You're going feral, going rogue. And, you know, we're social animals at the end of the day. And I remember as a younger person, some of my most important career moments were, you know, I'll say this, I had an entry-level job at the Department of Foreign Affairs. It was not a pretty job. I did a lot of really boring things, but I learned to go down to the parking lot and smoke cigarettes, and I met all the ADMs and directors general, and I had these fantastic conversations with these really wise, experienced civil servants who ultimately helped convince me that the future of my career was not going to be at the Department of Foreign Affairs, now External Affairs, Global Affairs, whatever it's called. But I'm just saying that there were lots of things about that, or my early jobs, which were weren't particularly fun, which were, you know, if I'd had a choice not to go and still be paid, I probably would have stayed at home in my pajamas, but I wouldn't have understood the opportunity cost of that decision. There's something in all of our lives, Janice, where, you know, necessity is the mother of invention. We need to get out of ourselves. We need to be pushed by factors and forces outside of our control often to know and realize what truly makes us happy. And I realize I'm being super philosophical here, but that's part of the role of work, that work is not a therapy session. It's not some kind of dialogue with yourself about what you could or should have, or, you know, ordering a Starbucks latte with, you know, extra X, Y, and Z. No, work sometimes can be really tough, really uncomfortable. And it's often, again, though, what moves us forward, what causes us the stress response sometimes is what causes us to evolve.
To grow. Yeah. Because you're right, I think, again, to make this point that we have not made enough of over the last 2 years. You know, we're all talking about the mental health challenges, especially among kids. And the evidence is out now, Roger. Kids lost a year or two in reading scores and math scores. It's astonishing how costly this whole period of school closures was for kids. Because you don't only learn from your teacher, you learn from your peers. That's the point. And when you're in the office on a team, you're learning from your peers as well as from the person that you report to. And that's the part I think that we underestimate. And it's very, very important that we not lose it. So and the third point, and you've said, you know, workers are going rogue because they can. I have former students of mine living in Toronto and working in the Valley full time from their house in Toronto. They never go to California, but they're working for a company in the Valley. And, you know, I see them. They're isolated. And that's not good. They're not getting any social interaction with people in the company whom they've never met personally. And here's the flip side of the story. Because they're working at home online, they are putting in 15-hour days in front of a screen. There's no separation between home and work, which is not a great thing. So it's actually not about working less at home. Many people worked harder and longer at home during these. It's about building community. It's about mentoring the next generation who's coming in. It's about learning from your peers. And I agree with you. It's about a commitment that you make to your team and to the organization that you're working with. And so that's why for me, one day a week, I mean, it's, yeah. We shouldn't even be talking about it, frankly. Yeah. And, you know, it's really interesting to come back to the federal public service. The clerk, because there's a union, the clerk is our most senior civil servant, and she will certainly express her views, I would expect, next week. But ultimately, it's the political leaders who are going to have to order people back to work.
Yeah.
And that's going to be an interesting moment. Right. Our university said last year, Rudyard, when the virus was certainly much more prevalent, I hope, because we were less vaccinated and didn't have as much immunity, everybody back in the classroom, mm-hmm. everybody, teachers, students, you're all back because in-person communication really matters. Yeah, wear masks. Yeah, get vaccinated. We put great ventilation in, but everybody comes back.
Yeah.
And they were right.
My final comment on this is maybe, you know, this is kind of peak absurdity at this moment, and that we saw, you know, this week a disappointing number on Canadian GDP growth, much lower than the forecast of the Bank of Canada and the other mainline bank economists. It's quite possible, Janice, the next quarter from now, you know, we will officially be in a recession. And you know what's really clarifying for people? Job losses, in a sense that, you know what, you can't have the lifestyle of an entrepreneur who has, you know, all that flexibility. It's fantastic, but also no job security and no income security.
And no pension.
And no pension and no dental plan often and no eyeglass. And it goes on and on and on, especially in the public service, as it should be, because those people sometimes make trade-offs in terms of compensation versus security. But you can't have the lifestyle of an entrepreneur and then 100% job security and income security. So people may get a very painful object lesson in just the cruelties of higher interest rates, of collapsing consumer demand, of an economy that has to deal with the highest inflation in 40 years through a contraction of demand to make demand line up with supply by crushing demand across the economy. So maybe this all goes away. I hope so, Janice, because, you know, Canada has pretty low productivity already compared to a lot of our peer nations. We are not a particularly dynamic economy, and we can't afford to have a kind of crisis around I would go a little bit further. I would say an ethos and ethic of work. Yes, nope. Some people are working hard at home, but others are alighting. They are sliding. They are falling off the proverbial table.
Yeah. So one quick comment before we leave this one, because it's such an interesting topic, the future of work, and it tells us a lot about what our society is going to look like. The productivity statistics are really interesting, Richard. In fact, we did not see a drop in productivity when people were working at home. If anything, a slight increase. Yes, during this
but
period.
So far, Janice, this is very early on in the experiment. You don't know what the consequences of these decisions are going to be 3 to 5 to 10 years from now.
You know, it's be interesting that you're right. And it would be interesting actually to take these numbers apart. Did we maintain our productivity or grow it a little because people were working 15 hours a day at home or 12 hours a day at home instead of the 8 that they would have in the office? That's one possible explanation. But productivity is not the whole story. I think that's what you and I are both saying. It's not only productivity, it's creativity. And if you're isolated and you're not part of a community, by definition, you're going to be less creative. You have to see people and bad ideas around. You just do. We're social. And at the very minimum, 2 days a week. I don't think one's enough. I think it's at least two.
I would say at least three and maybe more depending on your role. Matt Ridley had his great latest book, you know, this meme that ideas have sex. You know, there's an evolutionary aspect to ideas, and you need them kind of out there meeting each other, hooking up, creating other ideas.
It's a great metaphor. Yeah.
Okay. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back on the other side, a little new feature we're going to do in the show, an occasional kind of masterclass, quick masterclass on an important kind of idea or issue that is shaping a lot of the public conversation, a word, a phrase, a trend that maybe we don't fully appreciate or understand. We're going to get Janice to explain it to us, hopefully make us all a little bit smarter. Back after this break. You've been listening to a sample of the Monk Members Only podcast. To access the rest of the episode, consider becoming a member. Membership is free and available at www.monkdebates.com. Once you've joined as a member, go to your membership profile to access the rest of this episode and all of our Monk Members podcasts. Thanks for listening.